Well, good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson, the car guru. Glad to be with you as usual. Yesterday was a big day. Today's a big day, too. But yesterday was even a bigger day for the Ford Motor Company because they officially launched the 2022 F-150 Lightning, the first one rolled off the assembly line. Down there in Stanton, Tennessee, they're getting pretty excited about the new mega campus, which is being built. I think it's about 45 miles northeast of Memphis. So that's where the bulk of the F-150 Lightnings are going to be built. They're building the ones right now up at the Rouge River plant. It was the original. Well, that's where they used to build Model A's, and they started the Rouge sometime in the late teens. Early 20s. I'll look that up real quick. I think I need to be accurate. Yep, I was close. It was 1920 is when they first opened the Rouge River plant. So it's real close to Ford Motor headquarters. I've been in that plant where they build the F-150s. The plant's actual first products were boats, Eagle boats, World War I anti-submarine warfare boats. They were produced in what they called Building B. The original Building B is a three-story building. It's part of the legendary Dearborn Assembly Plant, which started producing Model A's in the late 20s and continued production of Ford full-size coupes and sedans through 2004. And then they started producing, not too long after that, F-150s. Yeah, they built the F-150 plant. They also built Fordson tractors, and it was not until 1927 that automobile production began at the Rouge, but it was with the introduction of the Ford Model A. You know, that was back when raw materials would actually come up the Rouge River and on trains and be dumped off, you know. So Ford had their own foundry, you know, where they actually made steel. And, they had their own wood shop where they took raw timber and turned it into wooden wheel spokes. But this location, the Rouge, I have a hard time saying that, the Rouge River Complex, they pretty much manufactured most of the components of Ford vehicles. They just didn't have suppliers like we have now. But starting with the Model T, they were building what they called knockdown kits. And they would build partially completed vehicles that were disassembled and more easily shipped by rail. And they sent them to various assembly locations across the United States to be locally assembled. This was something that I talked to the daughter of the Ford dealer in Greenville, Tennessee, back in the teens and 20s. He used to have to go to Knoxville with a heavy-duty truck, and they would unload Model T knockdown assemblies onto his truck and haul them back to Greenville, and they would assemble them here. So imagine that if you wanted to build some inventory and you had to make trips to Knoxville. Now, you know, a trip to Knoxville in the 20s was not like a trip to Knoxville right now. I'm sure they had some dirt roads that you had to travel on at that time. I don't think there was that 11E, if it even existed, was all paved. It's really hard to say, but it was a different world back then, no doubt. But when you fast forward to today, it is the home of Ford's Rouge Center. It's an industrial park. It has basically six Ford factories on 600 acres of land. They make steel there at AK Steel is the name of the company. It's a U.S. steel maker. And then the new Dearborn truck factory has one of the only vegetation-covered roofs and a rainwater reclamation system that the parking lots there are porous, and the water drains through the porous asphalt and is recycled rather than having water dumped into the Rouge River I'm sure it's polluted enough as it is. But it employs 6,000 workers at that one place. Mustang production used to be there. I know that one of the Mustangs that I bought recently, a 66 Mustang, was built in Dearborn. But it was moved to Flat Rock Assembly Plant in Flat Rock, Michigan. They built a plant there many years ago to is basically a plant that was shared by Mazda and Ford to build the Mazda 6, the Mazda 626, and a couple Ford products, the Fusion and the Probe. Remember that? It didn't sell too good. But there's so much history with the Ford Motor Company when it comes to production and family. And, you know, it's the only family-owned business still today, you know, as far as the auto industry is concerned. There's a lot of suppliers that are independently owned, you know, not part of a major corporation. Ford has stockholders. It's just, and really the stockholders have more stock than the Ford family does. It's just that there are two classes of stock. And the Ford family are the only ones whose vote counts. So, you know, you can own 15% of something and still be in control if you've got the only voting stock. And so that's why they have been able to maintain control of that company for all these years. But it's worked out pretty good for them. I mean, they've had some really tough times, just like all of us have. Some great leadership and some terrible leadership over the years. But, you know, they a lot of people give them credit after the Great Recession of for not taking the bailout money that General Motors and the Chrysler Corporation did. But I'm glad that everything came together for all the automakers. You know, Ford just borrowed enough money prior to the recession to be able to survive it. GM and Chrysler did not. And so, you know, that makes a big difference. And I'm sure that Ford would have had to declare bankruptcy as well. But they were basically, I don't know whether you call it they were saved or not. Because, you know, when you borrow money, you got to pay it back. And General Motors and Chrysler chose to file bankruptcy. And so all of the shareholders were wiped. All of the bondholders were wiped. And, you know, they just were not able to pay them to get their investments out. So GM created a new corporation, which was funded by the federal government and the labor unions and a few other investors, I guess. And they were able to come out of it and be much stronger because of it. Let's just hope that this does not repeat itself. It's likely to, because it's history, and history tends to repeat itself, but we shall see. Okay, I'll take my first break and be back here in just a second. Okay, we're on fire here at My Car Guru. Not really, but I am going to talk about the top 10 causes of car fires. Have you ever seen a car fire? It's a frightening thing. I came upon, well, one on the interstate that was terrifying. Multiple cars were burning, and you know, you just pray for the people that are involved and hope that everybody got out. I guess it's no worse than a house fire, but they can be very dangerous because there's this big old explosive material in the gas tank called gas. And when that goes off, then you get a big kaboom. But anyway, let's talk about car fires and the major causes of car fires. Want to? Number 10 are design flaws. Now, a design flaw in a vehicle usually isn't going to cause a fire on its own because there's no on-off switch for lighting a vehicle ablaze. The U.S. Fire Administration estimates that fewer than 1% of car fires are due to a design problem. Usually, the manufacturers catch these before they get too bad, and then they have a recall. And you've probably gotten one for maybe a wire that's in the wrong place or some insulation that might tend to get hot because it's too close to the exhaust manifold or something like that. So that can definitely cause a fire. Poor maintenance is another reason why your vehicle could catch on fire. forgetting or neglecting to properly take care of your car. You know, just let's say you have a leaky seal or a faulty wiring that goes without repairs. You know, wires, when they're rubbing against each other over time, will wear through and get to the copper. And when the copper touches the other wire, it can lead to a spark and set off a fire. An engine with a bad gasket is more likely to drip some type of a hazardous or flammable fluid. Just over 20% of car fires can be traced to electrical failure or malfunction. So just, I don't know what you do about this. You pop the hood every now and then and take a cursory look for leaks or frayed wires. You know, get the flashlight out and just look around. I don't think you have to worry about anything that's, you know, 5 years old or newer. You could have a leaky gasket or something like that. You know, that oil leaks down from the valve cover and gets on the exhaust manifold. More than likely, you're just going to smell it. It's not going to set off something. But if you get that oily smell, burnt oil, you'll know it when you smell it. Then that's something that you need to get fixed. Crashes are the number 8 cause of fires, depending on the impact site. Most vehicles' crumple zones are designed pretty well, so the body and the frame can absorb the force of a blow and protect internal dangerous places like the engine, the battery, even the gas tank. But a hard enough hit is likely to cause fluid leaks and spillage. And if you've got a hot engine and you've got, you know, gasoline flowing over it, then that is going to ignite. So that's something you really can't avoid that. I mean, that's just something that can happen, and God forbid it doesn't happen to you. Number 7 reason cars catch on fire, because it was intentional. It's arson. Now, why would somebody set fire to somebody's car? Well, lots of times it's just revenge, or maybe just a vandalism or something like that. Or it could be insurance fraud, and that's one that is a very common thing. You know, they think, I guess, the person who's setting their car on fire doesn't consider that there might be some really smart people who know how to tell if something's been ignited. So that's probably not a good thing to do, but it is the number 7 reason why cars catch on fire. Number 6 is hybrid electric vehicle batteries. Now, it wasn't too long ago that the Tesla Model S was awarded the unofficial title of the safest car ever by the media and by Tesla themselves, until a Tesla Model S caught fire in the fall of 2013. So the company implied numerous times that its fully electric Model S was all but immune to any type of battery-related problems. But such was not the case. Chevrolet also had to recall about 110,000 of its Volt EV vehicles from 2017 to 2022 for potential battery fire issues. They traced it to a hardware and software issue with what? Yeah, the batteries. So number 5 reason for vehicles to catch fire: overheating catalytic converters. Those suckers really get hot. They are part of the exhaust system, and usually they overheat because they're working too hard to burn off some of the exhaust pollutants that they're designed to process. But if the car's engine isn't operating efficiently, like it could be due to worn spark plugs, and the vehicle's not burning the fuel properly, then a lot of that stuff ends up in the exhaust system, and the catalytic converter has to work a lot harder to do its job, and then it catches fire. And, you know, normal operating temperature for a catalytic converter is between 800 and 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. They can get up to 1,400 degrees Fahrenheit. Not only does this cause damage to the catalytic converter, but also the surrounding parts kind of get hot too, and if it gets into some insulation on the bottom and burns through that, then you could have a problem where the car catches on fire. That makes perfectly good sense. Number 4 reason, overheated engines. You know, an engine that overheats and causes a car to catch fire is especially good example of how one problem can lead to another. You know, an engine can overheat and make its fluids, like oil and coolant, rise to very high temperatures and begin to spill out of their designated areas. You know, they need to stay put, and they drip and drizzle and spurt throughout the engine bay and onto the exhaust system, and kablooey, there you go. So 2012 recall of about 90,000 Ford cars equipped with a special powertrain. The engine sometimes overheated, and so they had to do a software update. Isn't that weird how hardware and software comes into play? I guess that's another example of why we need these computer chips and need so many of them to keep these cars running. Number three cause are spilled fluids. It kind of goes back to the same thing. Gasoline or diesel fuel, engine oil, transmission fluid, power steering fluid, brake fluid, even engine coolant. All of these are circulating when the car is on, and all of them can catch fire if their lines or hoses or reservoirs take a hit. So, you know, typically you're not going to have this unless you are very negligent in adding fluids to your vehicle or unless you're involved in an accident. Speaking of accidents, you know you're not supposed to, when you're filling up your lawnmower gas can and you have a pickup truck and you are trying to do it on the tailgate of your truck because you don't want to have to, you know, fill a five-gallon can up on the ground and put it back up on the truck. Experts say that that is a foolish thing to do because of the static electricity that can be created by the car and your interaction with it in a plastic can and so forth and so on. So when you are filling up your gas cans for your lawnmower, take it out of the truck, put it on the ground, and then fill it up with gas, and then use all those muscles you have to lift it back into the bed of the truck. Your wife will be so impressed with your ability to lift, still lift heavy things. Okay, electrical system failures are a very common, matter of fact, the second most common cause of car fires. Car batteries are problematic, and not just hybrid and all electric vehicles, but just a typical lead acid battery. They have charging cycles and it can cause explosive hydrogen gas to build up in the engine bay. That's if your battery has a little crack in it. Those fumes can leak out and, you know, can produce sparks and quickly ignite any kind of fluid drip that might be in there. So that's something you want to be concerned about. And then finally, fuel. Well, fuel is a fluid, right? And it leaks sometimes. I've got a leaky carburetor on my 65 Corsa. It has four carburetors on it. And I've got one that's just ornery, and it likes to leak. And so Johnny has to go in there and tighten things up and make sure I don't have anything loose. You know, that's an air-cooled engine. And you know where carburetors sit, right? They sit on top of the engine. I wish they'd figure out a way to make the carburetor sit to the side of the engine, you know, where it's, if it leaks, it's not going to go right down on the intake and then flow around and possibly hit the exhaust and then set off a fire. Gasoline at a temperature of just 45 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 7.2 degrees Celsius for those of you who go by the metric system. So 45 degrees Fahrenheit or above can quickly catch fire from a simple spark. It happens all the time and on purpose in a running car, but it's contained inside the engine. You know, you can have an explosion inside your engine. It happens all the time. That's what makes your car go down the road. But gasoline that reaches 495 degrees Fahrenheit will ignite itself. So it's easy to see how fuel dripping onto hot metal and plastic parts can cause a fast-spreading fire. You do remember when I had I was down at the Weigel's gas station and I was filling up a gas can for my lawnmower. Yes, it was on the ground. And I was just kneeling there, and all of a sudden I get this weird sensation that something is spraying in my face. And folks, the people at the gas station and the oil company said they have never heard of a fuel hose bursting like that one did. But it did. It had a bubble on it, and it bursted right into my pearly whites. No. Well, yeah, it hit me in the mouth, but also in my eyes. And it Gasoline will actually burn your retina, and that's not a good thing. So I had burned, they did not catch fire, thank goodness. But I was scared. I mean, I was concerned about, you know, all the fuel that was on me, and it was spraying up like a rooster tail. And I was just praying that there wasn't anybody with a lit cigarette. See, those are kind of the things that people do around gas pumps. They get a little casual and they want to look cool. And so they light up their Camels right there while they're pumping gas. Not a good thing to do because a fuel hose might burst. So watch out for that. If you see any bubbles on a fuel hose, go to another pump and report it to the people who own the place. All right, so I'm going to take my last break. Be back here in just a second. You know, they did determine that the reason that big ship sank that was full of Porsches and Lamborghinis and Volkswagens, it was pretty recent. I hope you remember. Big old ship. I think 1,200 cars, something to that number, close to it or more, went down or really at the bottom of the Atlantic right now because of an electrical fire from a battery in a car. They don't know which car because there were a lot of electric vehicles in that ship. But that's what caused it. So it can happen. You know, that's just, we don't want to go around worrying about that kind of stuff. But there is a, the thing about it is with a gas car, the gas tank is in the back and it's way back yonder in the back of the car. But you're sitting on the batteries in an electric car. So that's a little bit more concerning, but hopefully they'll figure out a way to keep us safe. Maybe the solid-state battery technology will take care of that and charge faster and give us all kinds of other benefits. Oh, well, I hope you learned something. If you didn't, I apologize. If you want to try again, then I'll be on tomorrow morning at 9:05, and I'll see you then. Thanks for listening.